Hey guys, you're here with Dr. Molly,
And Todd Rowland.
and we're bringing you the podcast, The Business Side of the Pet Industries. Today we're here with Amy Hillis, co-founder and executive director of Social Pet, as well as the director of PAC. So thank you for being with us today, Amy.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we're very excited. We met Amy at Groomed this year. She did a couple of the boarding education classes. And so not only were we glad to see those brought into Groomed, that was the first time they had been there, but that they had such a knowledgeable and approachable person teaching those classes. So I know we learned a lot about hiring, policies and procedures, kind of some of the ups and downs of the boarding industry. So let's just get started and let you give us a little bit of your background and how you got started with Social Pet and PAC and how, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, so I have been in the industry now for about 10 years. We opened our first location in Pineville, North Carolina, which is in South Charlotte, in 2014. We're actually getting ready to celebrate our 10-year anniversary on June 9th. So it's been about 10 years. Prior to that, I was in education. I actually taught sixth graders and seventh graders, and I taught language arts, and people say that's crazy because that age is just such an interesting age group to work with. But it truly was a lot of fun. And I was at a great school. I moved into a leadership role leading the curriculum and testing piece. And my husband was building out a business plan as part of his MBA program for Social Pet or for a dog daycare. And he was working with a group on it, and the group abandoned it very early on. There was just a lot of reasons why it wouldn't have been feasible in reality. And so, we were talking about who was going to be starting, leaving their job to start Social Pet. And at first, he was going to be the one to leave. And then, he and I have been talking, and I was at a fantastic school. I loved my principal, my coworkers, the students were amazing. I mean, it was really a dream scenario in terms of teaching middle school, and I still just wasn't satisfied and fulfilled. And I felt like if I'm not happy here, I'm not going to be happy anywhere. It really doesn't get any better than this in terms of teaching and at the school I was at. And so I ended up leaving my job to start Social Pet. And financially, that made a lot more sense anyway, because he was in commercial property management. So we could support ourselves off of his salary a lot easier than my teacher salary. But we opened the doors in 2014, and I mean, it was dead. It was very anticlimactic. We had a great open house, and we're feeling good. And it took several weeks and even longer, really, to establish a decent client base. There were times those first couple of weeks where the phone just wasn't ringing on our front desk. And I thought, is it broken? I mean, what's going on? And so I remember there was one day I called the desk phone from my cell phone and it rang. And I was like, okay, it's not broken. And then the reality sets in, like, oh, so no one
Oh,
really is
dang it, that's
calling.
broken.
So, I mean, it was a very long, slow, arduous process for us to really start to build up a client base. And it took a long time. And then, we got our footing underneath us and we wanted to keep growing. And so in 2017, so 3 years after we opened Pineville, we opened our Charlotte location. And Charlotte's a big city. Right now, it's got around 2 to 2.5 million people. And so the pet care climate has really expanded substantially since we've been in business. When we started, we had around 30 or 40 competitors, and now we've got over 100 doing boarding and daycare in our area that are operating legally. So we opened Charlotte, and we thought, oh, we already have a presence in the city. This is going to be great. And same thing, it was still very, very slow. But we worked in it, and we worked on it, and we kept growing. We made a lot of mistakes along the way in terms of what quality pet care should look like. We transitioned our whole daycare model from large group play to small group and one-on-one play because we saw that there was a need for quality pet care for dogs who don't love being in large group, which honestly is most dogs. So we've been able to establish a really good niche that way. And then last year in July of 2023, we opened our third location in the North Lake area in North Charlotte. And so again, still, it, you know, was slower getting started. We really, you know, got our footing underneath us. And then that mystery illness that happened in the fall and winter, you know, the media talked all about that. And even though we had no cases here in the Charlotte area, it still put some fear into people in terms of bringing their dogs into a facility. So, but you know, we've gotten past that, and that location is doing well now too. So it's kind of a snapshot of how we've grown. It's been tough. I don't think a lot of people talk about how difficult it is to grow. It's just my husband and I, we're not backed by any private equity. And that's pretty rare in the Charlotte economy, the Charlotte landscape that we live in. It's a lot of franchises and a lot of private equity operating as private labels. So they still look like family owned businesses, even though they're not. So we've really found that as a way to differentiate ourselves, where we're able to grow, we're able to stay a family owned business and focus on a high quality, high level customer experience, dog experience, and then also our team member experience as well, which is truly the most important, by making sure they have the resources and the support that they need to be able to do their jobs and then also grow in their career path too.
So how have you been able to bring on, I mean, obviously you've expanded quite a bit over the 10 years. How have you been able to grow your team and do team retention with that?
Oh, it was so much trial and error with that. I think we've been through a lot in the last 10 years in terms of the economy and what our workforce wants at this time. And then I think just when we got it figured out, we went through COVID and then everybody's attitudes changed about work again. So we were very slow and intentional. And, you know, I don't know that I can give much advice on those early years, because again, I think we just made so many mistakes and we were thinking of it in terms of what, you know, we personally would want out of a job or a career, and not really thinking about what our team members and our employees were looking for. And so, you know, essentially what we found was that we needed to focus on culture first. And I think the big turning point for us was when we established our mission statement and established our core values, and then started to actually truly function on a daily basis, living through that mission and that core values. And that, I mean, that took a few years. I don't think we really started to nail that until the Charlotte location was open in 2017, 2018. And even that, it, you know, it took some time, but We have our mission statement, and our mission is that we exist to enrich the lives of dogs and the relationships they share with those who love them. And that's how we make our decisions operationally and from a marketing and sales standpoint. If it doesn't align with our mission, we're not doing it. And then our core values are passion, excellence, growth, and safety. And so we did a lot of work coming up with those values and creating value statements and competencies to go along with those values. And it's something that we really hit hard when we onboard new team members. And it's something that we revisit on a very regular basis in meetings and in conversations and in performance reviews. And so once we established the mission and the core values, it was a lot easier for us to determine our ideal employee and what our workforce really needed to look like. So we had that side of it. And then we also had adjusted our daycare model. So North Carolina requires one person to every 10 dogs. That's the ratio that's legally required in the state. And I don't know of many or any other states that have a required ratio. I know best practice is typically 1 to 15, 1 to 10, 1 to 15, depending on the dogs. So we had to, you know, make sure we were hiring enough employees and staffing properly to be able to handle this enrichment model and these small groups, one-on-ones and rotations. And so we determined that we really needed somebody who had strong work ethic, was intrinsically motivated, was a good communicator, who enjoyed working with people also, as maybe not as much as they enjoy working with dogs, but somebody who could at least, you know, fake it till they make it. And so you know, that's just critical in our industry. And again, another way that we could stand apart. And so we built our workforce very slowly with those core values and those character traits in mind. And then we put in training processes and programs and education and certification programs around those things to make sure that they could continue growing. They could have what they needed to do their job and be very, you know, competent and really thrive in their roles. And then we also wanted to make sure we were putting career path planning in place so that as people wanted to grow within our company, there was a path for them to do so. And so we established different levels of the roles that we have. We were able to build out our leadership team. So there were human leadership opportunities as well as dog leadership opportunities. And that further developed into marketing and management as well.
And I heard you talk about that, you know, you're creating careers in the industry too, like it's because I think that's important too, because you find so many people, especially young people, that love it, but they're necessarily their family or whatever's like, oh, you've got to go do this. That's not a career. You're playing with dogs. And it's like, I know when Molly first started the mobile grooming, people were like, okay, so then what are you going to do next? Because, I mean, she was in school to be a teacher too. And it's just like people just thought she was playing with dogs in the back of the van at day. And it's just like there's so many people who don't want to work at a desk. Yeah. And this is a viable career, but it's the owner's responsibility to show them that there is a career path. I mean, we had somebody at one of our locations and they were like going back to school for their second degree. And I asked them, I said, why are you going back to school for this other degree? And they're like, well, because I feel like I'm never going to be able to have the things that I want in my life at this job. I said, not in the position you're in right now, no, but you can grow with us. If you don't even like that industry you're going to school in, but you just want to make the money, you're not going to be happy there. If this is where you're happy, we can start on that career path of where we want to, where you want to go and get you there. And I love when I heard you say that, because I think that's very important, because there is a lot of turnover, because people do think it's a dead end job, or they're getting pushed from their families or outside people saying like, you're never going to be able to buy a house being a kennel tech or something like that. And it's like, no, I mean, you can grow with the company.
For sure. And I think, you know, you made a comment that we, as the business owner, we sort of owe it to them to provide that career path or make sure that they see the options available. And if I think about where the industry came from, you know, for a long time, it did have a very dirty reputation, and it's not necessarily the best reputation now still, to your point. It was a very dirty reputation. We're thinking traditional kennel, chain link fences, the dogs are just in runs, it smells. And that has really evolved a lot as the industry has grown. People right. need to feel proud of the company that they work for. And if the working environment is not one to be proud of, then they're not going to feel that way. And so, yes, it's a dirty job and it's uncomfortable because you're working in the heat and the cold and the rain, but there are still ways to bring that level of professionalism and pride to that. Everything from the uniforms you require to the policies that you enforce to the pay structure, the bonus structure, the communication strategy, the career path planning with, you know, spelling out these different roles. Our really key employee isn't necessarily going to know what career path is available to them. How would they know? I mean, part of this industry is still relatively new, and we're attracting people primarily who want to work with dogs because people have let them down in some way. And so they want to work with pets. So we owe it to them to get that right for them.
Yeah, I had a call yesterday from one of our mobile clients who's been a mobile client of ours for 10 years, and they've had about 6 different mobile groomers, and not because of change out of groomers, just because they don't want to be on a schedule and they want to get in when they fit in. But she called today and she said, are you guys hiring? And I'm like, yes, but she kind of talking about the job. She said, I have never met 6 people from one company that only had positive things to say about. And she said, so I think that y'all might be the right fit for me. She said, but I can't groom dogs. So we have other positions that we may
do. She's like, I don't care really what I do. She said, but you just seem like someone I may want to work for, because all of your groomers have told me that. And it was like, that's amazing. One of the biggest compliments, you know,
yeah,
we've got.
Like Molly.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. And you know, it's kind of the same, like, if I'm hiring somebody, I have interviewed people who have applied for a specific position where I've said, this is not the right role for you, but I like you. and we're going to find something if you're open to different options. And when you find that match, that cultural fit and, you know, the personality and the values, and that's aligned, like, that's an amazing thing. Like, you have to, maybe you can't always make it work, but you do, I think, owe it to the person, to the company, to the dogs, the clients, to find a way to be innovative and to make that happen. And it's a really great thing when that does.
Oh yeah, definitely. So let's talk a little bit about PAC and how you started with your involvement with them and kind of what that looks like as far as for the industry.
Yeah, so PAC is a nonprofit organization, and it's a third-party certification for the pet care industry. And it's spelled PACCC, and it's the Professional Animal Care Certification Council. So it's quite the mouthful, but it's independent third-party certification. And so PAC has been around for also about 10 years. I got involved in 2019, 2020. My first year on the board was officially 2020. And so I was just looking for a way to get involved with the industry, to make an impact on a broader scale, and to really start networking with people who, honestly, people who knew more than me, and where I could develop relationships and not only make social pet better, but then also take what I had been learning over the last several years and give back to the industry in whatever way that might look like. And so I got certified in 2020. Bill and I are one of only three operators in the state of North Carolina who are certified to operate a pet care business. And then we've started to trickle that down to our management team. We actually require our managers to get certified at their level within 18 months of employment. But I joined the board in 2020, and it was just such a growing organization, and it still is. It's really exciting to give people this opportunity to find another way to help make the industry more professional, help legitimize their business. And then also, going back to what we were talking about with career path planning, giving their people an opportunity to grow in their career and get education to make their jobs better, earn more money. And so it's just really been a great thing. So I've been on the board. I started out as just the board secretary, and then I moved into the vice chair role, and now I'm the chair. This is my second year, and my last year as chair, and then I'll have one more year next year. But it's been really exciting, again, to bring a standard and a level of trust to an industry that historically has just not had that. And really, every other professional industry has a set of standards or a credentialing process. And pet care, up until PAC, you know, at least on the boarding and daycare side, has not had that credentialing and that certification process. So we've got several hundred professionals that are certified worldwide. It is an international certification. And then our board is a board of volunteers. We're a working board. And so we're traveling to trade shows. We're meeting with people. We're getting out into the community. So we've actually had people, somebody from Denver reached out, somebody from Washington State, and then somebody else from the Washington, D.C. area reached out to get involved with their community. And so we actually went to visit Arlington, Virginia, and do a community presentation on the state of pet care in that area, the lack of regulation, and what to look for in a pet care provider. So it's really all about just empowering these pet care professionals, and then, you know, bringing that level of trust to pet parents, because they deserve to know what to look for in a pet care provider as well.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to agree with you that the pet care industry is just not regulated how it should be. And I hear people all the time go back and forth over this about how nice it is, because there are hoops you have to jump through. And at the same time, it's just like, you know, I wish it was regulated. And I know that it's moving, especially in the grooming industry. It's not. And it's just like, there's everyone, they throw the word, oh, I'm a certified this, I'm a certified that, but it may be an online certification that you printed out because you watched one webinar. So it's like, there is not a true, you know, every other, you know, industry that works with the health of people, you know, and even, you know, the veterinarians have to, you know, they have a standard and a code and, you know, ethics they have to meet. And it's just like for the pet, the rest of the pet care industry is there's really just, you know, nothing that's governing us. And it's just like, I'm glad to see that it's moving in that direction, but it's moving at a very slow pace.
Yeah. Cause it's amazing to me how many other industries, you know, not only is continuing education important, but a lot of things it's required. And yet in the daycare and boarding and grooming, I mean, they're just, it's a lot of owners don't even want to pay for continuing education for their employees, or won't even allow them to have time off to go to a trade show to get education when they're paying for it themselves. And it's really mind blowing.
Yeah. And you know, what I have found, again, I spend a lot of time traveling to different trade shows, and we're at this really interesting pivotal point in the industry where there's a lot of new people entering from different industries. Those are the questions they're asking. Well, where's the credentialing body? Where's the education requirement, the certification requirement? What I have seen, and this is no knock to anybody, because I might feel the same way if I was in that situation, but for the people who've been operating for, you know, 30 years, they're like, well, why do I need to get certified? I already have the trust of my clients. I'm busy. I'm doing everything right. I already know everything. What's the point? And I'm a big believer always that education is the answer and you always need to keep growing. But what I'm seeing with newer people is they're asking for this. And I think there's a, you know, kind of to what you were saying, Molly, there's this misunderstanding of what certification actually is, because we spend even a lot of our time explaining the difference between PACS certification and taking a course and getting a certificate is that continuing education component. So you can take a class and get a certificate, and that's fantastic. I mean, you need to do that, but that measures your knowledge at one moment in time. Your pet parents and your staff want to know that you are staying current on best practices and continuing that education journey. And that's what certification does. So PACS certification, for example, it's time bound and it's revocable. So certification is good for 3 years. During that time, you need to get continuing education units to recertify. And then when you recertify, it's good for another 3 years. The certification is also revocable. So if I take an online class and get a certificate, nobody's going to take that away from me because I did it and I knew the information at that time. With PACS certification, we have actually revoked people's certifications once we've found out that they are not abiding by our code of ethics or they're doing something egregious that is in violation of what PACS stands for. So we had a certified professional in Canada who was reported to have picked a dog essentially and was kicking this dog, and the dog was allegedly misbehaving. And so they were kicking the dog. And so we did a full investigation. We saw the video, we did some interviews, we talked with that person, and the allegations were true. And so we revoked certification because the pet parents, they need to know that that's not okay. And there are options out there. And it was, you know, it was honestly really great because it was the business owner who reported that from their own employee. They wanted to make sure their pet parents knew, yes, this happened, but we're doing something about it. And that is not okay with us. And so I think that's really where we see the industry going. It's another way to think right now. It's another way to stand out, unfortunately, because so many people are not completing certifications. But I think in the coming years, we're going to see that be the norm. If pet parents knew that there was an optional certification that their pet care provider chose not to pursue, I think that would, for me, it would raise some red flags. Why are you not getting certified? So that's what we're trying to get out there with PAC.
That's awesome. So to circle back to Social Pet, so your co-founder with your husband, Bill, so how is that working with your spouse?
How much time do you have?
Yeah.
So it was, you know, it was really, really challenging at first because, you know, I left my job first and worked in Social Pet, and then he joined after about a year. We got to a point where the growth was being held back by him not being involved, and we needed to just let go of his salary so we could just both fully be in Social Pet. And I think it's really hard. It was really hard for us when we were first starting out, and you guys probably experienced this too. You both kind of have to do a little bit of everything, and there's a lot of overlap. And that can involve just really stepping on each other's toes. And then if you have a different communication style, that can make things more complicated too. And so Bill and I have an extremely different communication style, and both are really effective. But when we get together, it's truly like we're speaking a different language, and I will not understand him. Yeah. And he will not understand me. And so after several years of operating like that, we actually invested in an executive coach. And that has been the best thing for the business and for the marriage. And I always tell people ask me, well, what's the difference between consulting and an executive coach? And I feel like an executive coach is like professional, it's like counseling for your job. And then when it's, you know, when it's with your spouse, then it's like professional marriage counseling almost. And so the big thing that came out of the executive coaching process, and we still work with her, but the thing, big thing that came out of that was more fully defined roles for Bill and me, where we were able to work on what we enjoyed and what our strengths were, and make sure that we were also adding a lot of value to Social Pet. And so that's still an ongoing process today, but defining those roles has been the best thing for us. Then we're in our lanes. We have a professional relationship where even though we're married, you know, we've got the boundary, or we attempt to. I make it sound like that happens on the best days it will. But you know,
there's exceptions. Yeah.
Yeah. We try not to have the pillow talk be about Social Pet and what dog did this and did that. But yeah, so we have our defined roles, and you know, our family time is our family. And then we schedule time every week to have a weekly meeting, just like we would if we were purely coworkers, because you know, and we tell this to our employees as well, just because you're around each other all day doesn't mean that you're communicating properly. And so we have a full communication strategy with a series of one-on-one and group meetings. And that goes for Bill and me too. So he and I meet together every week, and we have those Social Pet specific conversations, and that communication, getting that figured out has been the best thing for us. And so with that coaching process, we figured out our own roles, our own communication strategy, and then our growth plan so that we can grow Social Pet together, but then also have our individual things that we're working on. So I chair the PAC board. I'm involved with IBPSA curriculum writing and some fear-free things. He's on the board of IBPSA. He's involved in other boards and other organizations. So we're able to, you know, stay in our lanes and grow our own individual skill sets, and then bring that together for the betterment of Social Pet. And I think, you know, it's definitely not easy. It was ugly. Like, talk about, I wouldn't say blood, sweat, and tears. There was no blood involved, but like the tears involved.
There could have been. Yeah.
It was really difficult. And I think that mental toughness is just required, and just keeping in mind that we both have the same goals and we want the same thing. I think that's what gets us through. And so we've figured it out. We're always trying to do better. We definitely have our days where it's like, I don't even know like what you're talking about, but we'll figure this out. And so, yeah, I mean, it's a work in progress, and we remember we've got the same goals that we want to achieve at the end of the day.
I think that helps. That's really beneficial. That was the same with Todd and I. I had started Molly's Pampered Paws about 3 months before I met Todd. So he's been here since the beginning, pretty much, for the growth. And even if he wasn't involved in the day-to-day, he was involved in the listening to me vent, you know, helping me troubleshoot, you know, these terrible clients, you know, all the things, and the stress of it all. But it's just been, you know, and then as we continued to grow, he would help out here and there. And then, you know, like you said, you get to a point where, you know, Todd had to end with the career field he was in to come on board full time. And that was because we realized where we wanted to go together with the business was to keep growing. And you can't do that with one person. And we had kind of experienced that same thing where it's just like, you know, people say, oh, I could never work with my spouse. And we're just like, oh, we can do it. Like, you know, he's been involved and, you know, he knows what's going on and I know what's going on. But it's very hard. You know, it's just, you have to find that balance. And I think that's is where a lot of working spouses or working couples that get together is they don't set those boundaries. And it takes a while to even figure out, once we realized we wanted to have defined roles, what those actually were. You know, it's some of it is stuff we enjoy. Some of it is stuff just one of us is better at than the other. Yeah. You know, we all have strengths and weaknesses. So playing on those really makes a difference. And like you said, it's never perfect and there's always learning to be done. And, you know, our roles have changed, you know, things that we started doing, you know, now he does. You know, I was the budget queen. I love budgets and so does Todd, but that was one thing that was super hard for me to give up control is like, I'm the one that has to do payroll. I have to do the budget every week, the expenses. That's just because I've always done it. And then letting him do it, it was like, well, have you done it yet? Have you sent it to me? Have you emailed it? You know, and it was like, getting to that point, he's like, I do it on Tuesday. You did it on Monday. I do it on Tuesday. And I'm like, you know, and now it's at that point, but I had other stuff I needed to focus on. And then, you know, now Todd's passed it off and he was the same way, you know, well, the transactions aren't done yet. And it's like, well, they'll get done. And so, you know, it's just really all about finding that balance. And I really like what you said, you have the same goals. And that's something that we've had to tell ourselves, you know, especially when you take on a new project and it is so crazy and you're changing things and, you know, getting everything up and running. It's like, at the end of the day, no matter what goes on, like Todd has my back, I have his back, and we have the same goals. Like we want the same things and everything else is just noise. So once we can come back to that and remember that, it's just like, okay, take a breath, let's start over. And then, you know, we're good from there.
And we've even got our team members now, they know what, you know, defined. If this is come up, you call me. If this is good, because I would have one of our mobile groomers send me a picture. Does this look okay? I'm like, that is not me.
I have no idea. Yeah,
I will never comment on your groom. Do not.
Yeah,
ask.
Yeah.
He's like,
yeah.
I mean, the dog's cute, or he'll text me. He'll be like, I know something's wrong, but I don't know what. And it's just, you know, it's just coming up with those little things. Like now they know a payroll question. They forgot to clock out. They don't call me. They send an email to Todd. Like it's so getting the team on board with different roles and responsibilities of who is was helpful as well. Cause it was, we're all about communication and, you know, we used to have everyone message both of us all the time so we could both stay in the loop. And then it's got to the point where if I don't need to know about it, I don't need to know about it because I'll look down and have 100 messages for the day. And it's like, you know, maybe 5 of those are relevant to me, you know.
And so I think that's such a great role model too, for your team. When I think one of the most challenging things for a manager to learn is communication and delegation, and they need to delegate. And I hear oftentimes those new managers like, oh, well, they can just call me whenever, or I can just do it myself. And it's like, no. Like you need to start leading through other people and really utilizing your team to get things done. And when they can see that the two of you can do that, and it's the same with me and Bill, when they can see that Bill and I can do that, and you know, that's a Bill thing, I don't need to know about it, or I just need to know the end result, and vice versa, it gives them confidence. Like, okay, you know, they can delegate and they're leading the whole company. Like, surely I can delegate when I'm working in the same building as my assistant manager. I know we're going to meet every week and talk about these things. And so it's, they're seeing it in action, and then it's hopefully empowering them to do it themselves too.
Yeah. And I think, like I said, we kind of like that self-management, even at our lowest level of team member. And that's helped too. Like we even have, you know, they've got the how-to, the SOPs with pictures and step-by-step. Even the washing machine has the picture of what buttons to push and stuff. And it's just like, you know, it just, even the littlest questions of like, hey, I can't remember which setting. It's just like, you know, but they know where to go and find that information. Like our mobile vans, like, and we want to do it for every facility. We just haven't got there yet. You know, every little thing, even turning on light switches is a video on a YouTube channel that's private to the business. And it's just like, you know, there's so many things that can be troubleshot just by we've experienced it. This is how we handled it. And this is the standard of care, standard of operations. Yeah. And you know, so many people don't have that.
Yeah, used to, we have the mobile fleet, and used to when a van would break down, which they do, they're a nightmare. It would be a big ordeal, but now we've got the team where they call the tow truck. They know what dealership it goes to. They know they can use their work card to get an Uber to go home. They know to let the scheduler know to reschedule their appointments. And then, you know, we'll get a call from the dealership. Oh, it was this. And like, I didn't even know the van was there. So, I mean, it's...
Yeah. And that's great. It's like, oh, but then it's like, huh. You know, it's kind of like that meme of that girl who's like, huh? And then, yeah, like, huh. You know, yeah. I know they can't see my face now, but yeah, when they can do it themselves and they're empowered, it's just such a great thing. And that then goes back into that career path planning of, okay, I can do this. You know, for us, 1 year we had something flooded, you know, on like Thanksgiving morning, of course. And so we came in and there was like 2 inches of water all over the place. And it was like, okay, well, we handled that. If we can get through that, we can get through anything, really. So, yeah.
I do have one final question. How has it been, sort of asking people this question, because it has put a strain on some family relationships and some personal friendships as we've continued to grow. Our time is limited. Like when we have our free time is worth more than
anything.
And so we're really good. I'm really good about saying no. I mean, Thanksgiving, no, I'm going out of town on vacation. Like we got it covered, and Molly's gotten better, but we have noticed like it seems to be hard to keep those friendships as you continue to grow, because Molly uses this example, like, you know, someone messing up on your Starbucks order is nothing in our life. I mean, where you may have to replace a motor in a van, or you, like you said, you come into a flood, and some people just don't relate. And so it's even hard to, like, they're like, how's your day going? Well,
where do I begin? Yeah.
Have you and Bill had struggles with keeping those friendships before, or, you know, have you had to, how have you handled that?
Yeah, it's definitely been tough. So we went through a wave when we first opened the business where almost all of our friends, you know, they just didn't understand. They didn't understand why we were so busy. You know, they knew like, oh, I see you leaving for work at 6:30 in the morning and you don't get home till 8 o'clock at night, you know, if they're my neighbors. And it's like, yeah, that's what I do. And we lost a lot of friends, I just think, because they didn't understand, you know, if you are off, why don't you want to hang out? And it's like, well, I'm exhausted and I just want to be alone. Like, I've been dealing with customers all week and I just want to be with Bill and just be a human being and not talk about dogs or think about it. And so we kind of went through a wave when we first opened. And then as we've grown, we've gone through other moments of, you know, making friends, but then them just not understanding. And you know, and then we had Bill and I have an 8-year-old son. And so that added an element to the mix as well. And so, you know, he's 8 now, he'll be 9 in a couple months. And so what I've really had to come to terms with is if I'm going to say no, or if I'm kind of faced with a choice of, oh, I should go hang out, but I should get this work done or whatever, I have to kind of think about what I want my core memories to be. And sometimes it's something work related, you know, sometimes it's something that I know will really move the needle forward or a really cool experience. And I'm going to be okay missing that time with friends or family. But then sometimes the core memory needs to be family or friends. And I'm going to maybe, you know, neglect work a little bit to put that energy into family or friends. So I have to think about, you know, what do I want that memory to be? When I lay my head on the pillow at night, it's never that I crushed it in all areas. You know, I was maybe a great business owner, but a crappy mom that day, or, you know, not the best wife, or I was a really great wife and mother and friend, but not the best business owner. And I just, you know, we joke a lot of times, like when I'm laying on my deathbed, am I going to wish that I groomed more dogs? Like full haircuts, probably not. And so maybe I don't put all that energy, you know, for us where we focus on boarding and daycare into that. And so it's kind of just thinking about what you want your life to look like and just being okay with that. And then as you grow into the industry, I think it's really important to network. Our best friends are in this industry. They live all over the US and Canada, and they really understand what it's like. And so I think as a business owner, as an entrepreneur, life just looks different. And it's just about networking and finding your people and finding what really fills you up and what you want that life to look like for yourself. And then being okay with the fact that it's going to look different than it does for a lot of other people.
Yeah, I think that's, we've at one point a couple years ago, we realized that yes, these people that have been our friends for a long time, they're still great friends and hope we can be friends, but we have to start finding friends who, I don't want to say, not on the same level, are same on the same path that we're on, so that they understand when we cancel last minute and we had these plans for 2 months because something happened, and they don't, because they do the same thing to us or whatever. And so that's just, that was a struggle, probably more for Molly than me. So it's been,
And it's really nice, you know, as we are developing these networking, these relationships and things, that's something we talk about too, is how important that is, because, you know, there's always going to be someone that's, I feel like, that's been through what you're going through, or been, you know, or they just understand, or they legitimately will just listen, even if they don't, haven't been through it or don't have advice, because, you know, there's going to be a time that, you know, I may call Amy and be like, oh my gosh, I can't believe all this has happened. But then next week, you know, you may need someone too. So just, it has been really nice that, that's one of the big things, you know, from that we've gotten out of the podcast too, is it's even forced us out of our comfort zone in talking to people at those high levels that maybe I would have been intimidated, you know, longer ago to even speak to. And now it's like, you have these real in-depth conversations, and, you know, that's what we always tell people. People will come up and be like, well, I was just, you know, I've wanted to, you know, I've seen you at 4 conferences, but I haven't said, hey. And it's just like, we, so now we make sure to tell everyone, like, we are approachable. We are just people. Like, we are just people. And it's just like, it's so nice to actually see and talk and meet people that are, you know, doing way more than Todd and I could dream about doing or have done or have been through it, because I don't know, it's just, it's nice to talk to people who just get it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, I agree with you. I think the best part about these conferences is just meeting people. And especially with your podcast, you have such an amazing opportunity to connect and learn from so many different people. So I think that's amazing that you can do that. And I mean, I'll be your friend if you guys need friends. I'm looking for people who understand. So you can call me, you can cancel on me. It is all good. I get it.
So for people who are interested in learning more about PAC, where's the best way to do that? Is there a website, Facebook page? What's the best way?
Yeah. So the PAC website is paccert.org. It's paccert.org. And then you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram at PAC Social. Those would be the best ways to connect with us. We post on our Facebook page. And then also we have a certified professionals only Facebook page as well. So when somebody does get certified, they can join that group. And then it's another way to meet certified professionals and bounce ideas off each other with people who have similar goals.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time, Amy, and we will talk to you soon, hopefully.
Yeah. Thank you. Thanks, guys.